we present the news quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Welcome to the news quiz. We start with a sign spotted outside a London laundrette, read by Zeb Soans.
Ladies and gentlemen, drop your trousers here for best results.
Our thanks to Caitlin Stevenson for having the presence of mind to send us that cheeky business. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and Edwina Curry. And opposite them, on my left, Rebecca Front and Jeremy Hardy. Francis, which department's EU report is something to treasure?
It could be the Treasury, I think. George Osborne went to something called the National Composites Centre, whatever that is, near Bristol, with Liz Truss. And that chap with the beard, Stephen Crabb, the one who replaced Ian Duncan Smith, and Truss and Crabb. Sounds like the sort of thing John Whittingsell's girlfriends get up to of an evening. And Truss and Crabb, oh, and Amber Rudd as well. So it was Truss, Crabb and Rudd, rather magnificently. And if only they'd had Jupp with them as well, they'd have a complete set. But anyway, they all got going at the National Composites Centre, and he said that if we left the EU, he came up with all sorts of incomprehensible algebra. And then, I mean, I jotted down some of the words he used. He said, but dummy variables and exogenous instruments mean that iteratively weighted least squares and so on and so on. They looked pretty miserable, all four of them, and it's no wonder in the Cirques. And they also had a big sign behind them saying £4,300 it will cost every family in Britain if we leave the EU. And when you read the small print, this was in the year 2030, and it turned out not to be true anyway, because George Osborne doesn't know the difference between GDP per household and household income, so he got in a bit of a muddle, poor chap, but anyway. Even if he had got it right, it would be a bit far-fetched to suggest that he can foretell to the nearest £100 how much they're going to lose in 15 years' time. Not 4,200, not 4,400, £4,300 exactly. I mean, he can't even get his forecast straight 6 months ahead of time, let alone 15 years. So it was all a bit grim. And then salvation came in the form of Michael Gove retaliating the next day. Whereas George Osborne had been going on about his iterative variables and things, Gove came storming out, talking about the Habsburgs and the Ottoman Empire and Catwoman, magnificently, and even Dennis the Menace was in there somewhere. It was fantastic. It was sort of worthy of Boris Johnson, really, this speech.
It's been quite interesting seeing Gove and Osborne sort of pitted against each other and somehow having to choose which one of them you like most. And my kids used to come home from primary school having played that game, Would You Rather? And it was things like, you know, would you rather eat vomit or poo? I don't know why that came to mind this week.
Is that like a new show, Eat Vomit or Poo?
Gosh, if ever a title had BBC Three written all over it.
If you had to choose between Osborne and Gove, Edwina, which direction would you go in?
I agree with Francis. I think he made a mistake doing all those formulae and numbers and all the rest of it, because it's all guesswork anyway. You might as well, for an awful lot of this, just wet your finger and stick it up in the air and see which way the wind is blowing. They're all trying to forecast the future, and actually that's a game that not even politicians have learned how to do. I think in many ways the best thing about being in Europe is we can send all our criminals and ex-criminals and old lags and are trying to escape from the police to the Costa Brava in Spain, and we can get rid of them. That seems to me a very good way of dealing with people who are difficult to us.
I thought you were going to say to the European Parliament.
Who else has come out in favour of Brexit this week?
Ian Botham, Rosemary West, most of the presenters on Five Live.
Has H from Steps made his view clear?
That's just a little treat for the last week. That will be the ultimate decider. Who else has waded in?
Oh, Obama.
And Putin as well. Putin loves the idea of Brexit, apparently. Maybe I dreamt that. I'm sure.
do you have a lot of dreams
Obama,
about
not
Putin?
So much. Obama's slightly anti-Brexit.
And ISIS, in one of the pro-EU papers, it said the only people who want us to vote for Brexit are Putin and ISIS. I don't know how they consulted ISIS about this, but anyway, so that settled. It's a bit like those old Sun front pages where they used to say, Stalin wants you to vote Labour. We've consulted a spiritualist who says that Doris Stokes has had a message through from the ether.
So if we vote out, you think ISIS might just calm down? Is that all that they want? Because if that's all they want, then fine, I'll vote out.
You shouldn't negotiate with them, Jeremy. Well, preternaturally, this is the series' very own Groundhog Day of a topic, the ongoing story of the EU referendum. So little to say, so many weeks still to say it. Both George Osborne and Michael Gove gave high-profile interviews this week for the We're Scared of Change campaign and the Ooh, Let's Just Bugger Off campaign. Osborne announced that if we leave the EU by 2030, every household in the UK will be £4,300 a year worse off. Speak for yourself, George. Good luck getting my money out of Panama. Leave campaigners have suggested a number of models for post-Brexit trade, the Norwegian model, the Swiss model, and the Turkish model, all of which have been vigorously tested by John Whittingdale. 2 points to Francis. Edwina, why has fast food caused a fast feud?
Oh, this is McDonald's. Wonderful. The Labour National Council has refused to have a McDonald's stall at the party conference. And in so doing, they have foregone £30,000. The Tories have said, yes, they're happy to have McDonald's, and the Dems are happy to have McDonald's. And they're doing this on the basis that they disagree with the way McDonald's treats its employees. They won't have unions. Meanwhile, up and down the country, lots of people have been interviewed eating in McDonald's and saying, you know, hands off our hamburgers. Who do you think you are? You're supposed to represent the working man and his family, and here we are, we're enjoying a meal out. So it's kind of backfired. Apart from anything else, you've got 50,000 people who work for McDonald's, so you ought to be in favour of employment. And most of the McDonald's places are franchises, so they're small businesses. So you wallop everybody at the same time.
I mean, the fact is, whatever Corbyn does, he gets attacked. If he'd said he welcomes McDonald, then they'd say, oh, look, he's taking corporate money. I thought he wanted the big money out of politics. Whatever Corbyn does, he's going to be attacked. If he rescues a baby from a burning building, they'll say, Corbyn is anti-fire. Flammable Labour leader shows contempt for one of man's earliest inventions that has brought warmth and cooked food to generations. The element-hating health and safety nut also showed disregard for water, praising militants from the fire brigades union for showering it onto the burning family home. And one of his own backbenchers denounced him, Wes Streeting. Wes Streeting apparently went to Cambridge, where he must have read finger painting and play. He said, well, they probably want to hang around a trendy falafel stand. Now, it shows his complete ignorance of the Middle East if he thinks there is something trendy about falafel. If you go to the Middle East, including Israel, you will see lots of people loving falafel. It is the most popular food. It's nutritious, high in fibre and in minerals and in protein. And you can't just go to a Middle Eastern country and say, look at them, the pretentious bourgeois knob with their falafels and their tabbouleh. They want some fries inside them. That's what they want.
That was a party election broadcast on behalf of the Pro Falafel Party.
Isn't that a kind of condom?
Surprisingly fibrous one.
I mean, I supported Osborne. When Osborne had a posh burger from Byron, when they do very nice burgers, Byron do. He had a posh burger one budget evening, and he was castigated. He tweeted a picture of himself thinking, I'll look like an ordinary person. So he put on his hard hat and he tucked a whippet under his arm and he chowed down on a burger to show that he was ordinary. And, of course, it was a Byron burger, so he was castigated. Why didn't you just go to McDonald's? You think, because he's rich, and he would be an idiot if he went to McDonald's. And if I was George Osborne, I wouldn't go to McDonald's. I would have unicorn burgers delivered by hovercraft to my country estate.
I want to speak up for McDonald's. I think they're very good. I really do.
No, you don't.
First of all, it's quick. Honestly, if you're in a rush, if you've got family, it's the best place to take them.
Toilets are
if
clean once an hour.
If you eat 42 of them, you're going to give yourself a heart attack, but that's not recommended.
You a big McDonald's man, Francis?
No. I'm sorry, I wouldn't actually know how to go about it. All a bit of a mystery to me, but I know...
If you found the process difficult, I would genuinely worry for you.
I know...
Colossally, this is the news that the Labour Party have banned McDonald's from having a stand at this year's party conference, meaning that the only person with bright red hair whose wacky antics bring a smile to the faces of young and old will be Shadow Defence Secretary Emily Thornberry. At least McDonald's still have the option to have a stall at this year's Lib Dem conference. There's still just enough space at this year's venue if they don't mind snuggling up against a howling void of existential despair. Jeremy Corbyn has had it in for McDonald's ever since they stole his personal motto, I'm loving it, and he was forced to change it to the somewhat less snappy, only through solidarity can the international proletariat rise up and throw off the shackles of their oppressors. 2 points to Ed Wiener. Jeremy, which race is increasingly about race?
Zach Goldsmith has decided to round on Sadiq Khan. People say Sadiq, but I was at a Muslim charity too, and everyone called him Sadiq, which suggests it's one of those things we slightly orientalise, thinking, oh, I'll try and do it like foreign people. You know, like newsreaders rather oversay things. Like that woman, Rita Lashar, was on the news the other night, she kept going, the Taliban, the Taliban, the Taliban. And she had a woman from Afghanistan who just kept saying, Taliban. But anyway, Sadiq is he's not an extremist. He's a tooting MP, he's a Muslim, and he's had loads of stick for people he's met because he's been a human rights lawyer. He's spoken on endless platforms. He goes to lots of events and speaks at lots of things. And, you know, if you go to a lot of things, you end up on platforms with people. I mean, I live in Streatham Hill, and it's a busy station. I often have to share a platform with Chuka Ramana. And but Sadiq got all this flack, and one of the things he got flack for was meeting a man called Suleiman Ghani, and he's been denounced by Goldsmith and by Cameron as being an extremist.
You know, you find yourself on platforms, Francis, be careful, with all sorts of people. I've been in the same team on Pointless as Diane Abbott. Does that count against me? And we won. We won £10,000 for charity as well. So
which is the extremist out of you and Diane Abbott, do you suppose? Which do you...
Well, the one thing that I really have against Diane Abbott, bless her, is she sent her kids to private school. Empty for Hackney.
Mm. I think the worst...
Lots of socialist principles.
It's her adoration for Michael Portillo, that's the worst thing. She's like a shower curtain. It's shameless. What's wrong with you, woman? She's so in love with Michael Portillo and so out of luck for so many reasons. Come on, Diane.
What have supporters of Zach Goldsmith's campaign released this week?
Leopard.
It was actually a song called Zach Goldsmith, Jita Jha, which translates as Zach Goldsmith Will Win, created by the grassroots organisation Conservative Connect, which sounds, well, it sounds like an absolute riot. Irrevocably, this is the London mayoral election and the allegations that the Conservatives are playing the race card against Labour candidate Sadiq Khan. Khan has been accused of sharing a platform with a supporter of Islamic State on 9 separate occasions. You know what they say, once is misfortune, twice is careless, 9 times is a calculated plot to bring down the entire Western world. The big competition for London Mayor is between Sadiq Khan, a son of an immigrant bus driver, and Zach Goldsmith, who once saw a bus as a child. Look, Mother, a tin of tired people. Two points to Jeremy. And at the end of round one, the scores are Rebecca and Jeremy have 4, but Francis and Edwina are in front with 6. We start round two with an email about upcoming events at a Hertfordshire social group.
The first meeting of the Erotic Writing Group will take place on April the 18th. Please use the back entrance.
Well, thanks to David Brown for forwarding that. Francis, what story are we all gagging to talk about?
It's a case called PJS v News Group Newspapers, which is The Sun. And there are so many celebrity injunctions, privacy injunctions these days, that there's a team of people at the High Court who have to make up these 3-letter disguised names, these anonymising names. And they are quite odd if you look at them, as I spend a lot of my time studying injunctions, seeing if I'm involved in any of them. And, and so you look at these things. And so when I was reading the judgment on Monday this week, the appeal court judgment in PJS, and every time I saw it on the page, it looked like PJs. Except, actually, it was clear that PJs weren't being warned for what they got up to, because the only detail we're allowed to know is that it involved olive oil in a paddling pool. But anyway, PJS...
It's a lot of olive oil.
It is a heck of a lot. I do wonder if they skimped a bit. I mean, that would be unbelievably expensive. You'd think you'd tip a bit of sunflower in when no one was looking. Economise a bit on the oil.
And you shouldn't fry in a paddling pool anyway, because the rubber melts.
Yes. And PJ's had a threesome, a celebrity threesome, as it's known. But at this point, the poor old anonymisers at the High Court just gave up. Their imagination failed them, and they've called them A, B and C, D. Pathetic. So A, B, C, D and PJS got on with their olive oil, and then the Sun found out about it when A, B and C, D went to the Sun some years later. And it's injuncted, and it's been appealed against.
I'm going to say who it is. I'm going to say who the three people are. It's me, Emma Thompson, and Joan Bakewell. I mean, it was
lucky
great.
Lucky. I mean, the really irritating thing about this is we're all paying for it. The Supreme Court and all that, the Court of Appeal, and everybody else. That's all public money.
It's probably cheaper than the olive oil.
Well, now this is what they get. This is what they get up to. When Michael Gove, who's the Justice Secretary and responsible for that, and supposed to be cutting budgets all over the place, is off doing Brexit and goodness knows what. Michael Gove, stop messing around with Europe. Get back to your job. You've got a job to do to stop all these idiots spending our money on loads of judges at the Supreme Court. I don't give a toss who it is. I really don't. I actually wrote down here celebrity threesome.
Is that your diary,
children.
Edwina? So, do you think this could spell the end of the super injunction? This
well, these
charade?
Aren't super injunctions. I coined the word super injunction, as the OED will one day testify. So I know what they are, and they're not this sort of injunction. They're much more severe. You can't even say that the injunction exists. That's what a super injunction is, whereas these are mere common or garden privacy injunctions where you called each other XYZ and MJ3, R2D2 or something. Dear old Whittingdale, the Culture Secretary, meanwhile, while all this ludicrous stuff about celebrity threesome is going on, saying the world will end if the papers are allowed to print this, and the newspapers saying the world will end if we're not allowed to, quietly, John Whittingdale has been getting on with having this tremendous love life, and then finally it comes out and issues a statement saying, oh, yes, it was a bit embarrassing, really, wasn't it? But there we are. And it's spectacular. I mean, it's always, with Tory MPs, in my experience, and I have some experience, it's always the slightly dull-seeming ones who are the tigers in the sack.
Absolutely.
Just checking. Glad to have that.
It's called camouflage, Francis.
Well, provocatively, this is the ongoing drama surrounding the celebrity injunction. Is it going to be lifted? Is it not going to be lifted? Until then, we're all just speculating about who we think it is. It's like a very tedious game of Guess Who, where if you win, you get imprisoned for contempt of court. The injunction is apparently in place in an attempt to prevent the children of this celebrity finding out the details when they grow up. And the last thing you want is to be confronted in later life with a revelation like this, when you've only recently been appointed Archbishop of Canterbury. Personally, I think people's private lives are their own affair. What a man does in his own house dressed as a beefeater straddling a rocking horse whilst drenched in peach juice is very much a matter for us enthusiasts. 2 points to Francis. Edwina, which one is turning 90?
It's the Queen, 90th birthday. And, you know, long may she reign over us, happy and glorious and all the rest of it. I love the story that was in, I think it was the Times this week. She's got a much better sense of humour than you'd expect. And she was out walking in the woods in Balmoral with her protection chap, her detective, and came across a couple of Americans. And they got chatting to this old lady in the headscarf and the wellies. And they said to her, do you live near here? And she said, yes, I have a house not far away. Oh, have you ever met the Queen? And she said, no. And she pointed at the detective, but he has.
What is the point in having detectives at Balmoral if random Americans are allowed to wander?
The grounds are open to the public.
Are they?
Yeah, and they're beautiful.
So you can literally go there and assassinate the Queen and it's fine?
Can pot around and, yeah. But this follows a long tradition.
There's a big difference between pottering and assassinating. I mean,
call me old-fashioned. I like to think there are lines and lines.
Yeah.
I was fascinated they said that she was going to go walk about, and I watched it. It was nothing like the film at all. maybe it's for the best, but she spent the afternoon in the outback of Windsor or Saxe Coburg Gotha, as it used to be called. But the thing is, I mean, we all want the Queen to live for a long time because of Prince Charles, but I have to say, people say, oh, isn't it marvellous? She's lived for so long. I think, well, yeah, but when's... I mean, no disrespect, but when someone has had a life of extreme privilege and comfort, I'm not that impressed that they've lived for a long time. I mean, if somebody has lived through torture and genocide and famine or being Shane McGowan or Barry Cryer, then I think, how the hell are they still alive? But when it's the Queen, you think, well, she's not going to fall off a ladder trying to clean out the guttering, is she? Let's be
honest. It's quite impressive that she's got to 90 and she's still in full-time work, because that's very much sort of, you know, setting out how it's going to be for all
90-year-olds. Because she's got no pension. She didn't plan. She didn't. If she, at the age of 21, she'd taken out a pension like a sensible young person, she could have retired years ago, instead of which she's trapped in an endless cycle of waving.
How did the Queen celebrate her this particular birthday? Anyone
Nando's.
Know? anyone know, Francis? Should you keep her?
Well, Prince Charles threw a dinner for her, is that right? After she'd been walkabout. She then went lie down, I expect, and then she had to have dinner with her family. No doubt they were reading the papers. I mean, the amount of guff they had to fill them with. The Express had a teaser on the front page saying, inside, why the royal family called the Queen the boss. Well, I think I can guess that one.
I love how these events bring out a sort of rash of witcheling as well from us all. You know, we all start going Nicholas Witchell, don't we? And using words that we would never normally use, like personage and Baruch Landau, majestic, you know, and everybody sort of talks in that slightly hushed way. Oh, she is marvellous. She is marvellous. Which she is, you know, she's impressive and she's 90 and all of that stuff. But, yes, it does rather, don't you think, it sort of brings out that toadying, fawning of us all. We all go a bit bunting heavy.
Calorifically, this is the Queen and her celebration of 90 glorious years. On the big day itself, the Queen was presented with a birthday cake, saw a 21-gun salute, and then lit a beacon, followed by bowling, chicken cottage and bed. A specially commissioned portrait for the occasion presents an angelic-looking Prince George, side-parting long socks, a ribbon-trimmed shirt, poised and ready to join the daily family rendition of Das Deutschlandlied. The celebrations will be rounded off by the ceremonial administering of the birthday bumps. So fun at school, but by the time you're 90, you're receiving quite a pummeling at a time in life when you're least well-equipped to weather it. Either way, violent tradition is violent tradition. Back off, Brussels. The Queen will also be having dinner this weekend with the Obamas. Don't know what's on their menu. I assume the Queen's having coronation chicken, while the Obamas will be swallowing a series of remarks directed at them by the Duke of Edinburgh. 2 points to Edwina. Jeremy, who didn't find being attacked a hoot?
Well, I guess we have to address this story. It's obviously it's a duty of Britain's, you know, Radio 4's flagship satirical programme. We can't get round it, difficult though it is. It's the man whose bald head was attacked by an eagle owl. He thought that by being bald that he could be mistaken for an egg, even though a bird's egg and a man's head are somewhat different in size. But I suppose hovering birds are often quite a long way away and might not understand perspective.
To Aeschylus, though, didn't it? An eagle. Was it an eagle or an owl? Eagle. Owl in this case, eagle in Aeschylus' case. Apparently attacked
him. You mean Prometheus
him.
As well? I think he got his stuff pecked out, didn't he?
God, I'd love to pretend I'm not out of my
depth.
His
stuff pecked out?
It's taken years of investigative reporting by Michael Crick to bring this... to bring this to the forefront. I mean, it's good that we know this. Because you think, if it hadn't been for a plucky reporter having the energy to research this, we would never have known this. Just shows what they can get away with.
Edwina, how worried should we be about this sort of thing? Do you think it could be the start of a kind of...
Owls are nocturnal, aren't they? Aren't they supposed to be doing this at
night time? That's what they want you to think.
It was 4 a.m. I mean, I'd call that night time.
What was this gentleman out doing at 4 a.m?
With his bald head. No better than he ought to be. Bald head, no knickers, if I'm not very much mistaken.
He was on the way to work.
There's nothing you can say about an owl attacking a man at 4 a.m. on his way to work.
Well, you could condemn it, Edwina. Or you could come out in favour of it. Well, heroically, this is the story of Exeter resident Richard Clevedon Smith, who was walking across a park at 4 a.m. when an owl swooped down and attacked his bald head. A sad story, but then this is the kind of thing that happens when you try to disguise your hair loss with a wig made of mice. I'm normally great with birds, said Mr. Smith, before stepping on a moorhen and accidentally kicking a mallard into a nearby wood chipper. He said, although having the owl go for my head was terrifying, in retrospect, I'm just glad he didn't notice my exposed penis. 2 points to Jeremy. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Francis.
Yes. John Hunter sent this from the Crawley News, and it's local journalism at its finest. The headline is, Break-in at Shed. A shed in Warnham Road was broken into at some point last Wednesday night or Thursday morning. It is unsure at this stage what, if anything, was stolen.
We will keep you informed of any further updates. Rebecca.
This was sent in by Chris Bennett in Dorchester, who received this letter from Cooperative Funeral Care. I wanted to inform you that we will soon be relocating our offices. Our new stylish funeral home is almost complete, and we would welcome the opportunity to show you around when you are next passing.
Jeremy.
Miles, this was sent in by Natalie McGillivray, and it's from Limb Life. A seriously injured limb woman lay in the street for more than an hour waiting for an ambulance that never turned up. The Northwest Ambulance Service said they are investigating the cause of the delay, and this will take up to 8 weeks.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Rebecca and Jeremy have 8, but this week's winners are Francis and Edwina with 13. Before we leave you, here is an update from the job section of the Bookseller Weekly magazine, sent in by Toby Marshall.
Mantle Books have announced that senior editor Sophie Orme will not be returning from maternity leave after an internal restructure.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Ween, Edwina Curry, Rebecca Front and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Zeb Soames. The chair script was written by James Kettle, Benjamin Partridge and Danielle Ward, with additional material by Liam Byrne and Laura Major. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC Radio comedy production.